Okay. Yeah, no, wow, great crowd today. I think this is the biggest place that I've seen. And typically, I know most of the people in the room, but today, I don't. So, for folks that don't know me, I'm Josh Fuller, National Marine Fisheries Service, Santa Rosa. I've been the lead biologist on the Potter Valley Project since 2013, I think. So, lots happened since then. This project has always got something interesting going on. Drought, relicensing, you name it. So it's been a busy, gosh, almost 7 years for me. Anyway, I'm going to get specific today about pike minnow suppression and what the biop is really talking about. I think just to provide some context, just so people know what's in there and kind of like listen to what National Marine Fisheries Service is working with in terms of implementation of the biop, working with PG&E, Round Valley, and CDFW. So there are a lot of words in here. Mary already warned me.
Don't read
that,
them all.
That it's not intended to read at all, just to give a flavor, and obviously folks can go back to the biological opinion and reference and read it in its entirety. But I'll talk about the RPA, RPMs, what RPAs and RPMs are. And then this pike minnow adaptive management suppression operations plan, it's pretty wordy, that happened in 2005. And then I'm going to kind of set the table for Paul, and Paul's going to talk about what's been done since that point in time. So what am I doing here?
It's not advancing to the...
You can just...
Try again.
There you go. Actually stand over here, it's a little bit easier. So, per the biop, and the effects of the proposed action, and when we talk about pike minnow, we really are just talking about, it's back then, and this was back in 2002, and then Jeffrey John can tell you that the consultation process, probably 5-7 years, a lot of negotiation, a lot of conversation, where the science was at that point in time. It's certainly reasonable to assume that some monos are being displaced, face competition, preyed upon by pike minnow. Pretty much everyone in this room is aware that there's a challenge with pike minnow or non-native to the eel and the challenges they present to steelhead in particular, but also salmon in general, some on it. Some are rearing steelhead within the project area. A lot of the biop talks specifically about the project area. Scott Dam down to Van Arsdale, about 13 miles above and below that area. And so it's kind of really important to have that context, because everyone realizes the pike minnow are an issue throughout the entire Eel River Basin, but per the biop, it's pretty specific to the area we're talking about when we talk about suppression. Some more language. So those impacts associated with the project led to, regarding pike minnow and some other things with operations, but specifically with pike minnow today, led to a jeopardy opinion. And then with the jeopardy opinion, it comes with reasonable and prudent alternatives. The alternatives are really how to avoid jeopardy, which is definitely different from the RPMs, which we'll see. But basically, the language goes on and talks about developing an adaptive management plan to deal with pike minnow. It talks about getting baseline information on pike minnow steelhead distribution, which has been done, evaluate different techniques for pike minnow suppression. Immediately, we need to do better there. And we're going to hear a lot about that today. And then, monitoring the immediate effects of pike minnow suppression. Okay, what's happening at that point done if you say you put a gill net in? What's the immediate impact? And then the longer term response, looking at it from a longer period of time, end of the summer versus maybe some treatment that happened earlier in the season, and then over time. There's more discussion in the biop about the RPA, and it really here is just to highlight, this reach between the Eel River, Scott Dam, and Van Arsdale. Really looks at Van Arsdale Reservoir, and then it lists a series of suppression efforts, and including angling, sanding, gill netting, explosives, e-fishing, and some other things to be carried out by a grounds group. So that's kind of the breadth of what's listed in the RPA. Still, this can even be a bit flexible because there's, in terms of developing suppression plans, we can come up and be pretty creative in that regard. But I think that pretty much covers most of it. It's just what that actually is. And then the reasonable and prudent measures, the RPMs are really to minimize take, RPMs are, you'll typically see those in biological opinions where it's not jeopardy, there's not RPAs, but at least ways to minimize the take of the listed fish that we consulted on. And this really just reiterates, what we saw in the RPA, adaptive management plan, develop that, get, you know, established criteria, areas to tackle suppression efforts within the project area. And then it gets into this more in-depth, all right, so what's like an operational plan look like? Like a year-to-year conversation of what's actually going to be done in X year following that summer. And I should also note, I think I missed it, the biop also is specific to suppression techniques happening between July and September. That's kind of the targeted window to probably get out and do stuff. All that boiled down to the biop being submitted and completed in 02, and then PG&E and NIMS, and I'm sure the tribe and CDFW came out and agreed on this adaptive management and suppression operations plan. A lot of the language in the RPA and the RPMs just carried into this plan. And it's got a list of goals, monitoring, effectiveness, and so on. And this is really the only document we have right now. Paul's going to talk about some things that came from this. And currently where we're at is that you'll see from Paul's presentation, we've tried some things. There were some challenges with take of ESA listed fish. And right now, I mean, for me, this group, I was so excited to hear that Caltrout's going to put this on. It's just, we need help right now, figuring out how to tackle this issue within the project area and then also across the watershed. So I'm looking forward to hearing folks talk about their experiences, and then hopefully we have a really good discussion at the end of the day. I'm thinking more than a half an hour, but really start kicking some ideas around and what we can do in the next couple of years. So hopefully that wasn't too long. Any questions?
Was there any monitoring data that followed? It was, I think, one of the last bullets on the RPA was monitoring effects. So we've been able to, did this help knock down hygiena populations or predation?
I don't want to steal Paul's thunder, but he's going to talk about that and show some results. But in the spirit of that, you know, I would say that our treatments haven't been as aggressive as we probably could do. Definitely, there is some pike monitoring and PG&E removes fish at that time. Paul's going to show you that. But really, are we getting a response from the Omicus population? It's a bigger question. Yeah, it's challenging.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We'll get more here in a second.
All right. Thank you.
I got one.
Oh.
Remind me if any of the block water releases were tailored to affect pike minnow populations in any way. I mean, you've been
No, but you know, that's one of the things that I think we always are thinking about. Like, I know there's some of us had discussions about, you know, trying to hit pike minnow when they're most vulnerable. So spawning in the spring, can we hit them with a big flush flow that really makes adverse conditions for successful spawning, right? Do the opposite of what we try to do for some on it. Like, really, and when it counts, I think that's probably a secondary benefit to some of the block water. The other thing we think about is block water, more water, giving Omicus more opportunity to avoid predators and Chinook for that matter. So there's different ways to think about that, but specifically targeting flush flows that would impact pike minnow, we haven't done that. But I certainly would like to hear from folks on that end. I think it's a good idea.
Thank you, Josh.
I just throw out that usually we're trying to, you know, preempt migration out of the 12-mile reach or the project reach of juveniles. So, and oftentimes the RPA or the RPMs require the call for the, I can't remember the numbers, for us to release warm water to help cue that immigration since it's.
Yeah, it's definitely
in that area. So there's kind of a conflict with the pike minnow and someone that's in that sense.
Yeah.
That time of year.
We need to make sure Paul has time. Just to say.
Sorry.
Thank you, Josh.
All right, well, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here today to talk about pike minnow monitoring and suppression efforts associated with the Potter Valley Project. By way of introduction, I'm Paul Kubitschek, aquatic biologist for PG&E. Been involved with the Potter Valley Project all the way back to about 1979, so I was there when we saw the first pike minnow. up here in the Eel River right about that time. So Josh has done a good job of providing background information on the requirements that we have under the RPA. What I'm going to do is take you through a brief discussion of what we've done in compliance with the biological opinion. Just by way of orientation, for those that aren't totally familiar with the Potter Valley Project, it's a It's a hydroelectric project up in the headwaters of the Eel and Russian River watersheds. It's a trans-basin diversion of water from the Eel River to the Russian River. The major components of the project are Lake Pillsbury, which is formed by Scott Dam on the upper Eel River, the release of water 11 miles downstream to Van Arsdale Reservoir, which is formed by Cape Horn Dam, and then the diversion of a portion of that water through the single ridge that separates the Eel River from the Russian River at that point, down to our powerhouse in Potter Valley. So let me take you through some of the activities that we've done in compliance with the RPA. First off, the monitoring component in the upper study area. We conduct three raft electrofishing sites in the Eel River between Scott Dam and Cape Horn Dam, that 11-mile reach of stream. Some of the results that we have, just briefly, this is the pike minnow catch over the years from 1990 to 2018. Each colored bar represents one of three different locations out there. You can see we did sampling over a number of years in the early 90s and then since 2005 pretty consistently. The take-home message here is that pike minnow population seems to be all over the map in terms of differences between sites and over the years. This is a very qualitative sampling method, but it does allow for, again, an index of what the population is looking like.
And Paul, which of those are in the reservoir or which of those are downstream?
These sites are all on the Eel River below the reservoir, three different sites. I want you to notice the catch scale here goes up to 160. You'll see quite the difference, order of magnitude difference here in the scale that's used for the steelhead catch at these same locations, from 0 to 20 is the catch. You can see quite the variation in steelhead numbers that we get out there from between different sites and from year to year. We also do monitoring in the lower study area. This would be the Eel River between Cape Horn Dam and the Middle Fork Eel River. That's about 37 miles of stream. We have seven backpack electrofishing sites there and nine snorkeling sites. We conduct the studies out there each summer. I want to show you the results from two of the sites, two of the long-term sites. This is the Eel River below Cape Horn Dam, just a short ways below the dam. We've got results, the steelhead are shown in blue, pike minnow in red. From 1981-82, when we found the first pike minnow out there, up to the current time. And you can see a little bit of pike minnow right there in 1982, a whole lot in the late 80s, and then inconsistent numbers over the years since then. The important thing to know about this station is that it has suitable water temperatures for steelhead. And as a consequence, you end up with some years where we do get some relatively good steelhead numbers. This is density of fish per kilometer. And basically, you see these better years are the years that have cold water temperatures. In contrast to that, this is a site at Emmendal, which is several miles downstream from Cape Horn Dam. This is a site that has temperatures that really are not conducive to steelhead. And it's only in occasional years that you may pick a couple of steelhead down there when the temperature's a little bit cooler. Again, you see large pike minnow numbers. One might argue that we had an explosion of pike minnow back here in the late 80s, and maybe things have leveled off here. But it's hard to make those kind of conclusions from this
data. Quick question, what size classes of pike minnow are included in that?
That's a good question. These sites are all weightable backpack electrofishing sites, and so it's mainly the smaller pike minnow. It's mainly young of the year, 1 and 2 year old fish. It's not the larger ones, which are mainly inhabiting the deeper runs and the pool areas. The raft electrofishing, on the other hand, is in deeper water area, and that includes a larger range of size classes. Okay, so what have we done suppression-wise for pike minnow? That was another component of the RPA. We worked collaboratively with the agencies and the tribes and developed a plan to test out various techniques in the river up in the area of Van Arsdale Reservoir. And we put together a plan to use gill nets in the summer of 2006 in the Van Arsdale Reservoir area. Basically, that gill net suppression effort consisted of a feasibility type effort to assess the technique, its effectiveness, and the potential effects on non-target species. We put multiple gill nets out there of various mesh sizes, set two consecutive nights in both July and August, both above and below Cape Horn Dam. And the nets were serviced every 2 hours in an attempt to try to minimize impact on the non-target species. So what did we get? For the entire monitoring effort out there in July and August, we picked up 61 pike minnow, sizes of 150 up to over 400 millimeters, fork length. Unfortunately, we also caught steelhead. 13 steelhead, 210 up to 500 millimeters, pretty good sized fish. And we also got 46 sucker. So where do we go from here with pike minnow suppression? We had a take of listed species in 2006 during that effort, and that led us to a decision to suspend our suppression activities until we could find an acceptable alternative that had more minimal effect on the steelhead. Despite a number of meetings and discussions between PG&E, the agencies, and the tribes, we have not come up with a method that we've all felt comfortable with. So as a consequence, there's been no further suppression efforts over the years. With relicensing that PG&E started up a couple of years ago, there were a couple of elements that related to pike minnow suppression there. We were looking at the review of various suppression techniques that were out there that might be applicable to the eel. And then we also did evaluation of predation hotspots. As most of you know, PG&E started the relicensing process. We got through half of the study period, one of the 2 years, and then we made the decision to cease our relicensing activities. Thus, the studies were also brought to a close at that point as well. So we're currently now in the process of making decisions on future actions regarding pike minnow suppressions under the RPA. And as Josh said, we're very hopeful with the discussions that are going on here today that'll help inform the decisions that we'll be making down the road. So with that, I'd open up to any questions if we have a couple of minutes still.
We've got a minute or two. Yeah.
Okay, so do you have any questions? I know that was a quick overview, but that's about all we have time for today. There's a lot more detail associated with this that can be made available. Yeah.
This is an invasive species with almost no predators, so you see that big increase in population when they're first introduced, and then you see fluctuations moving on into the future. How do you think that's going to affect our monitoring and assessment of our suppression techniques when we start that sort of thing?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, like you say, there's going to be a natural variability in the population of pike minnow, or all the species out there for that matter, because of a number of different factors. Many of which are beyond our control. And so that's always a challenge in any of these studies, is trying to tease out those various factors. And so you try to keep things as consistent as possible and try to repeat the studies on an annual basis to allow for a better interpretation of data. But I think we've got a long ways to go in terms of the actual techniques that we're using to even monitor the populations up there, because it's a little bit hit and miss, and you can see that it's hard to detect any particular trends in the data at this point.
So right now, the activity, suppression activities are mostly being judged based on their potential for pain.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess I might add, I think Josh was alluding to this a little bit, that as part of our monitoring effort, There's a little bit of suppression that's involved there, that all the pike minnow we catch don't end up back in the river. But that's the extent of the suppression that goes on now. And otherwise, yeah, most of the focus in determining future suppression work is related to not affecting steelhead.
Thank you.